So we've had some good morning, everyone. I'd like to call the legacy meeting to order. And we've had some members come in and had other commitments that had to step out briefly. But so maybe we'll do member introductions in a bit. But I just want to kind of start. I'm super excited to be on this committee again and to be given the opportunity to chair it. I'm a little bit afraid of doing that. I've all of a sudden had a different level of all sorts of new friends, and my jokes are being laughed at, and they're saying nice things about my hair, so I know they're lying about that. And no, it's really an honor, and I really, truly do believe this is a neat spot for all of us to be serving in. The Legacy Committee is one of the fine things that our state has done, and makes us a leader in the country. I had some folks in today from the History Center, and their new director is from Kentucky. And he just says, you know, this is just really neat what we're doing. And when you just think what we can do with this money, and here we are, we're in our 10th year. And so some of what we're going to do in the first couple of weeks here is kind of check in with a lot of groups. So don't be afraid if I've reached out to our staff, have reached out to some of the groups. I'm going to have you come in and kind of say where you're at. And I'm a little afraid, too, because I have two former chairs here looking at me. Mary Representative Murphy started this off in 2008 to pass the voters pass this, and she had the duty of being the first year, and just really laid an incredible base and has been involved every year since. And I'll probably have you speak about that at some point and just kind of how we've gotten where we are. But you have I don't know if we have in our pack, and it's my oversight if we don't, is your kind of your rule book, I call it, and
guide.
And we'll make sure that that's handed out to the members. And it was a lot of thought was put into that. I mean, just imagine starting this up. You know, every year we'll find out exactly how much the number is, but it's, you know, 600 plus million a year now. And just to, you know, or a biennium rather, and keeping that, you know, doing good work for Minnesota. And you set that up. And then Chair Erdahl was a former chair here and then went on to other things and bonding. But, and so I'm a little nervous about that. And I hate not to mention Representative Wagenius, and I know she really was instrumental in actually getting it to the voters. And more than, you know, and then beyond that, you know, the legislation that's set up, you know, beyond that too. So what a great legacy, sorry, but for Minnesota that we have here. So I guess we do have quite a few members. I've well, maybe we could start with that. I hate to reach out to I'll start with Representative Zhang over here, and then kind of work around. And I've asked you to do a little bit of homework just to kind of tell a little bit about yourself and how it might have been impacted by, you know, maybe one of the funds in Legacy or what you like to do perhaps in those areas, whether it's, you know, whatever it is. I just whatever it left you to, but just give a couple of minutes of, not too much, because I think we did this in another committee and it got a little carried away. But, you know, just a brief introduction. And we're going to ask staff to kind of do the same thing.
Mr. Too. Chairman, are we supposed to have pictures?
You were supposed to. Or books.
I'll be right back.
Well, you need to hear people.
All right, Mr. Chair, thank you. My name is Jay Zhong from District 67B. I remember many years ago when the Center for Hmong Arts got started, and Representative Sai Tao was one of the first Hmong State House lawmakers who actually got funding from the Legacy Amendment to get the Center for Hmong Arts going. So I'm very honored to be here on this very committee that got an institution going on to preserve Hmong culture and history. So thank you very much for the opportunity. I look forward to working with all of you here.
Thank you, sir. Representative Wiginius?
Jean Wiginius. I represent parts of Minneapolis all the way to the south in the central part of the city and parts of Richfield. And you asked me to bring homework.
Yep.
Here's my homework. This is the book I'm reading. It's Sicker, Fatter, Poor, and it's about hormone disruptors, and it's a popular book. You don't usually see this in popular books about hormone disruptors, but it's what they're doing to our kids. And unfortunately, Minnesota talks about them but does nothing about them. And so one of the things I'm going to want to talk to you about is, particularly for the grandparents among us, these things are generational. They go down. If there's hormone disruption in an earlier generation, it can be passed through to the kids and the grandkids. So we need to have some conversations about it, particularly because the Clean Water Fund, we spent $1 billion almost. We have no outcomes, and our drinking water is getting worse. So with that, the outcomes person I will pass to is Representative Murphy.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I take from your opening remarks that we're given a broad overview of where we are today rather than where we were 10 years ago. But you said something that tells a short story about why they wanted to be on Legacy. And I wanted to be on Legacy because I have been from the beginning, and I want to, I feel like a guard, somebody that wants to make sure that we stick with the principles and the expected outcomes that are listed in our guide that we developed, even though the Senate never accepted our guide. And what you said at the beginning was our committee is the committee that really is the backbone of how the legacy funding goes, in the sense that the four funds have a guide, and the people that think free money, are mistaken. There are rules, there are principles to be followed that we worked very, very hard on those first 2 years in developing and getting public input about them. I think, Mr. Chair, at some point in time we should go over them again as a committee to see if there should be any changes to be made now that we're 10 years into it. But maybe we will be able to do that after we've certainly done received the information that's going to come in this agenda and probably for the next two meetings also. So I won't talk about that anymore, but I did one of the things that I'm interested in all four funds, the Outdoor Heritage Fund. And I'd like to say that that has been the most difficult fund for the Legacy Committee at the legislature during these last 10 years to try to influence, because that has such a innate structure with the Lessard Sams roles that those, the appointed people, make to deciding how that fund is to be spent. And that's fine, because all the stakeholders in the world in Minnesota that have it in their blood. They're born with the DNA of the Sartzams' beliefs of what environment is and what culture should be, and they have much more knowledge than 15, 20 people on a legacy committee might have, because they lived it and breathed it all these years. And I have the utmost respect for that. But sometimes, collectively, we could make a suggestion or two that might help. Like, the ash borer disease was right there at the particular time. It wasn't wrong to talk about the emerald ash borer at the committee meeting. It was not. That's a legislative process. Now, last year, there was some changes in the clean water thing, fund, suggested by somebody other than the Clean Water Fund people. What harm is caused if people from outside of the people have a few ideas? Conversations are good, and we've been having them for 10 years now in all four funds, and it's worked. And people from all, as you said, Mr. Chair, all, people from all over the country are looking at this as an example. They're not just looking at something that has just one fund. They're looking at something that has four funds. And, you know, the Parks and Trails, they've got their group now, and but they're all guided by this in some way. And they know there are rules to be followed. And the people that want money from the arts or money from the trails and parks and trails or money from the Clean Water Fund or money from the Outdoor Heritage Fund, they have a website to go to and find out, what should we do in our application? What should we say in our application? We have to have some facts, and that's really good. And I won't go on any more than that, but it's really, really important. And this, that's why this committee is so important. I'm happy to see new people on it, yep, and the people from the past, because it's a working thing and it's a changing thing. And we are the voice of the voters from 2008, 2010, 2012, 2014, 2016, and now 2018, carrying on the tradition. And we have 15 years to go. Now, you said you wanted a picture.
Representative Murphy, yeah, please tell us about your...
I have a picture here that I'm thrilled to death with, because one of the things that I've advocated for and had a hope of from the very beginning, and if you remember, you might have lost the memory of that long night where the clock kind of stopped at 1 minute to midnight, and we didn't. Time was just passing, and I remember adjourning the meeting at 1 minute to midnight, but then getting up to my office and seeing a clock, and oh my goodness, it was 10 to 4. But that night, we were listening to testimony from people from all over the state about what their vision of what the four funds could do and what the arts and the Arts and History and Heritage Fund could do about art education and the arts board, the regional arts boards, and the parks and trails people were here. And people were saying, this is my vision. And one of the things I always talked about as being part of the fourth fund was that maybe the regional art boards could have collaborative programs with the regional library boards. And it's worked. In the funding hasn't been the same every year, but there has been money for library programming. Not books, not mortar, not fixed things, but Minnesotans all over the state working with the arts boards and the library boards across the state have seen many programs and had many experiences for little kids and high school kids and junior high kids and kids of all ages and lifelong learning experiences. So I was really honored when my regional librarian director came or wrote me an email and said, we need a picture of you with a book because that your contributions through the legacy bill, your contributions have made such a difference in the Arrowhead region. And we want to put your picture on a poster and hang it in the boardroom of the Arrowhead Regional Library. And just by coincidence, I didn't know that, but our photographer, one day in the spring of before this summer when I received this picture, we were in recess. It was a hot, awful day in May. We were in session. We were in recess. And I just picked up a book to read down on those benches by the chief clerk's desk. And the photographer took this picture unbeknownst to me. And so I had that picture. So when the director came, I said, I want to use that picture. And so it's a picture in the House chamber, not posed, not known it was going to be taken. Me reading the book. And now I'm a poster.
That's awesome.
And they turned it into bookmark, too.
A book?
And I'm thrilled to death. And I think it's the nicest thing I've received in many a year. So that's my thing.
Well,
and Representative Wiginius brought a book.
Right?
From a library. Or at least if I want to read it, I can go to the library and get a copy of the book.
I think we should actually ask our library to get a book.
The house library?
Uh-huh. Okay. To share.
Well, thank you, Representative Murphy. That was fantastic. I'm a little worried because I believe Representative Erdahl want equal time. So I saw him jotting quite a few notes. So we're ready for that. So I'm honored to have a vice chair here. She's a neighbor of mine in White Bear Lake. So we might hear a little bit about water from her, but I'm sure she's well beyond that. But go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members and all the folks in the audience and watching. My name is Amy Wazlewick, representative from District 38B, which includes White Bear Lake, White Bear Township, Delwood, North Oaks, and part of Hugo. And I think all of the four funds are really interesting and really important. I happen to really like the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. I go to plays and things like that put on by smaller organizations, and a lot of those the programs for those events have the Legacy Amendment little logo on it, and I always note that because that's something that I was fairly young when we voted on that, and so wanted to I'm aware of it and I acknowledge it and understand that that's part of what's being funded by it. I also brought an object. Actually, I wasn't prepared, but I brought this because I wanted water, and it actually is a Wiper Lake water bottle. And it has some canoe paddles on it. So Wiper Lake is a very kind of all of the funds. We have Parks and Trails working on a trail project right now. Water, I'm sure a lot of you have heard about water issues in Wiper Lake. Also, we have a really great Wiper Center for the Arts and Lakeshore Players Theater that just got a new home. And we are actually kind of in the middle of developing the Arts District. So all of those things are very important to Wiper Lake and the community. I grew up in Wiper Lake, so very important to me as well. So that's kind of my thoughts on that.
Thank you. Good job. I'm going to go down and then allow Chair Erdahl to have some time. Representative Green.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope that there's enough time left to hear the people who want to come and talk to us. But I'm Steve Green, and I serve District 2B, and so I'm in northwest Minnesota, pretty diverse area. We have farming, agriculture, logging, industry, and then I also represent the White Earth Nation up there. I agree with some of the things that Representative Murphy said. We are here. We're kind of the watchdog here. I know the legislative auditor looks out for everybody, but we on this committee are supposed to be watching these funds and seeing where they're spent, and it is our duty to the people who are paying these funds in to make sure they're not wasted. I did not bring a picture, but I do keep pretty close track of the funds and where they go. And I did notice that a couple of years ago, someone did get a $10,000 grant to take a trip to the Caribbean to view the sunset to get some ideas for art. So I may be looking to that for the next time.
Fair enough. Representative Heitzman, the GOP lead on this committee, so thank you.
So I appreciated, too, a couple of the comments Representative Murphy made. My district is the Brainerd Lakes area, District 10A, and I've told people before, and I still think it's true, that I think that I have the most recreationally diverse district in the entire state. You name it, we definitely have it. All the water sports, all the boating and kayaking, canoeing and fishing, and then the hunting sports, the trapping, deer hunting, duck hunting, all the waterfowl and upland game, all of that is in my district. And then the motorsports, something that does come up from time to time here in the legislature. I have ATVs and dirt bikes and four-wheelers of all sorts. So all these people trying to get along. And then just this last year, my girls finally talked me into horses. Right, yeah. I didn't approve of that. They were expensive. Not to get, but to take care of. Yeah. You know, it's an amazing district, and with so many different things happening along with the water and the forest areas in my district, there's definitely some things that are a draw to the metro, and so my 40,000 people will grow to well over, in some weekends, over 300,000 if it's a big BIR Nationals weekend, and we have all the dragsters coming in and so on. So it can be a really interesting part of the state. And I also appreciated, Representative Murphy, one of your comments, specifically referring to some of the ways that money is spent, and that that could be something that is revisited. And this is going to be a sore spot. I don't mean it to sound like that. But I have Mississippi Northwoods. And Mississippi Northwoods, I've been there many, 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 many times. It's something that is a jewel in my district, but it has been controversial because of the resource, the monies that were spent there. I would just like to point out how precious it is to my community, how important it is, and how so many different people use it. And there are people that use it with a motorized vehicle. And, you know, there's different feelings about those kinds of issues around the state. But in my part of the state, people love that opportunity, especially folks that aren't as athletic as others. You can go out and you can see 200-400 acres in a matter of a few hours and have a great trip. Those are kind of things that are really important to the people in my district, and I'm glad that we can at least talk about what those things might be, because those kinds of folks, maybe they'll show up to a meeting and talk about that. Maybe they will be heard. Maybe they won't. And I like to try to be a voice for them. We're supposed to bring a picture, Mr. Chair, and I didn't bring a picture to show everybody, but you know this. Some people might not. We had a number of storms in 2015, 2016, and I'm kind of a scrounger. I like to build something out of nothing. And so I have a little bit of a tree service business, and I took in a lot of material that was down and on people's homes, and I built an entire cabin, a timber frame cabin, out of all the timber that I reclaimed from my business. And so if anybody wants to see what that looked like, I have a little tour on my phone that I can show them. So thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate you giving us an opportunity to talk for a minute.
Thank you, Representative Heitzman. And if you get a chance, I like to visit members' offices and everybody's, and you learn a little bit about everybody who's got a full-size canoe in his office, so it's kind of neat.
On the ceiling, not...
It's not his desk. Representative Bowe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Greg Bowe, representing District 47B and Eastern Carver County and the beautiful Minnesota River Valley. And so pleased to be here, very excited about being a part of this committee. So Outdoor Heritage, Clean Water Fund, Parks and Trails, and Arts and Cultural Heritage, a lot of exciting subjects, and I look forward to being a part of that and working to find and maintain a reasonable and healthy balance between all these different items. So I did my homework, and I brought So I have two photos to share today. Number one is my son and daughter-in-law and myself enjoying the final stages of the MS-150 riding from Duluth down to the Twin Cities. And those of you who are parents will know that when a teenager asks if you'd like to do something like this, you have to say yes, because they don't always ask if you'd like to be involved in their life. And so I was excited to be a part of that. 150 miles is a long way to ride. You look at the map and it's downhill from there to here, but when you ride on a bike, it's not quite all downhill. But that was very exciting. That's photo number one. Photo two is a trail closed ahead sign that is the Minnesota River Bluffs Regional Trail that runs up the side of the River Bluff and connects Chaska and Carver County to Hopkins and the Twin Cities. It's a very popular trail, and they had a flood in June of 2014 that took a small portion of that trail, and it's been closed ever since. And I get a lot of phone calls from residents who want to know when we can open this up. So it just points out the importance for trails and trail maintenance and connectivity between different communities. And so that's a part of what lights my fire. So I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Erdahl, you didn't want Representative Murphy a picture with your book or anything?
That's what I was wondering about. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for bringing that up. Representative Murphy, all you had to do is, you know, come across the aisle. We've given you a book. Anyway.
Thank you.
I have been on this committee every year. In fact, I was even pre-legacy when, blanking on the name, the from Duluth, the representative, Mike.
Yarros?
Mike Yarros. When Representative Yarros had the Heritage Committee, which kind of was the predecessor of legacy. So I've been on it all the time. I've chaired this committee for 4 years. I remember fondly many of the things that Representative Murphy was talking about. Certainly that meeting that went from 4 in the afternoon to 2 in the morning, and all the folks that came by. And boy, I can remember as we hit midnight and Representative Murphy announced to us that it's only 10 o'clock in California. And later on, we got to 1 o'clock, and it was only 11 o'clock in California. And then at 2 o'clock, we were done. So it was a very fine night, and Representative Murphy did a fine job helping to listen to all those folks who came in with all of their ideas. I can remember that it ended with Renata talking about having a cauldron in the Capitol yard and teaching children dances.
Yep.
So it was quite a night. For some reason, has stuck in my memory. You know, there have been a lot of challenges with this committee over the years, and Representative Murphy very well explained a lot of them. Just a couple of things that have stuck in my mind. And again, you know, much thanks to Representative Murphy for doing those first couple of years and helping to set the stage for what the expectations were in the future. But certain things that hung over, the administrative cost issue, and you know, we worked with Mr. Nobles and came up with administrative cost expenditures must be directly related to or necessary for, and that's something that we've tried to use as a guide since then, but it's a slippery slope that we dealt with there. Another was dividing the percentages with parks and trails between the metro and the DNR in Greater Minnesota, and we wound up at 40-40-20, and please, no one try to change that. That was a real headache to try to come up with what we finally did. But I've enjoyed the service on this committee. A lot of good things we have done. And again, what amazes me yet to this time is that in the middle of the Great Recession, the people of Minnesota voted to increase their taxes to do these things.
That's true.
And so we owe it, you know, to the people to make sure that it is spent as they wished. And there are occasional blips in this that we need to deal with and have dealt with. You know, every now and then one of the regional arts boards might spend the money a little bit differently from how we think it should be. Every now and then, maybe a library will give $40,000 to an author, not me, for one afternoon, and you know that's kind of hard to explain to the public. So it is something that we do have to be watchdogs over. You know, that year in the budget, I cut $40,000 from the State Arts Board. Never intending that it be permanent, but just to make a point on the first go-around that we were aware of that. That one happened over in Stillwater. Of course, but, you know, you mentioned White Bear Lake. We tried to do some things there. I think if you really want to get back at Matt Dean for anything, just name a trail after him over there. So, again, thank you for the opportunity to continue. Oh, almost forgot.
Oh.
Yes, we do have a picture here of the Litchfield Opera House, a recipient of funding from this committee and from the Legacy Fund. The outside has been restored. It's a 1900 opera house where the Land O'Lakes was founded, where the basically the Minnesota REA was founded. The first all-electric farm in the country was established and assigned out of that building, my grandfather's farm. So anyway, we are still restoring. Just last night, the board of directors met trying to pick out colors for the inside. Will it be beige? Will it be burgundy? We don't know yet. But they're working on that, and there just might be a bill this year to try to help them get over the hump as far as what they're doing with the Opera House. But it's a building that was once on the top 10 most endangered buildings in the state of Minnesota, and now is well on its way to being a valuable contributor to our community.
Well, we had Representative Hausman here for a few seconds. So I'll just do mine quick. I spoke quite a bit in the beginning, but I just grabbed a picture from Christmas Eve here, and this is the chaos of my home. We're skating and just kind of being goofy and some sledding, even though there really wasn't much snow or anything. But so obviously I care about all the funds. I have a like many of us, I have a daughter that's in a band, and so we go to many concerts all over the state of Minnesota and the region, so that's pretty fun. And I typically get outside a lot. I like to have you, since you're an expert with wood cutting, because that changed a lot of my outdoor activities after last year. But I think I'll have you get them on the ground, and maybe I'll cut from there. But
do we need to bring a sawmill down?
But anyways, it's just kind of a Americana, I think, of or Minnesota winter scene of chaos around my home. So I thought that kind of captures the stuff that's important to me. So I'm sorry this kind of got out of control, but I think it was really nice to get to know each other better, and also for the people in the crowd to kind of get an idea of who we are and what's important to us. But I really do believe this committee is different, and I think there is a lot of, and I think this institution as a legislature could learn from us as a committee, and or historically that we, you know, that we are friendly. So I don't know if we can just quickly go through. So we have GOP staff, if you want to just quickly say who you are, and then if you brought homework, if you didn't, that's fine. But depending on how we do it, and we have our staff as well, and then we'll have the. Go ahead, just quick.
Mr. Chairman, I did bring homework. My name is Harry Miracle, in the House GOP Caucus researcher for the Legacy Committee.
Perfect.
And I brought a print of Glendalough Park, which is up in Otter Tail County. And to me, this was a park that was actually established when my grandfather was in the legislature as a senator from Otter Tail, 1992. So it's received legacy money in the past, parks and trails. And so this hangs in my office. And it does have President Eisenhower and Nixon, who were both visitors there, in the painting. So,
got bonding money this year, didn't it?
And it did receive bonding money for a new visitor center in last year's bill.
Well, thank you very much for being here, and thank you for doing your homework. I'm impressed. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nornes gives us the opportunity to donate to the walk to raise money for Glendalough. Every year we get the opportunity to contribute.
And I'll get to you in a second. Sorry, Representative Wiginius, please.
The problem is that he doesn't give us an opportunity to take an inner tube from Glendalough down the stream to the, I don't know what the next lake is.
Annie Battle at Molly Stark.
Is that the most fun inner tube ride in the state?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gies, it absolutely is. Nice, cool water after a long hike.
Thank you. I think we might have to add that to our tour list when we're out seeing sights of something. But yeah, go ahead and just kind of tell your story quickly if you can.
Thank you, Chair Lilly. My name is Margaret Zadra. I'm DFL research, and I just brought a picture from northern Minnesota where I was born and raised. My family didn't have a lot of money, but what we lacked in money, we made up for in resources, so we were able to grow our own food and cut wood for heat. And so even though I didn't grow up with vacations or things like that, I got a wealth of resources here in the state, and I want to pass that legacy on to my children. And so I appreciate our leadership and our voters with the foresight and the thought to preserve that for our children.
Okay. Representative Hausman, do you want to introduce yourself, please? We're kind of, thank you for coming.
I think I'm probably sitting at a place I'm not supposed to be sitting. I have to be over there.
I don't know. We have such horrible chairs here, so I hope you didn't get one.
I was unfortunately off site, and so I'm not organized, and I didn't bring what I was going to, so I'll have to figure another time to do it.
Okay. Thank you. So I'd like to introduce myself.
Did you say?
Oh, yes. Please introduce yourself. Sorry.
So I'm Alice Houston. I represent some neighborhoods in St. Paul, the cities of Falcon Heights, Lauderdale, and most of Roseville. So if you have been to the state fair, you've been to my district.
Thank you. So I'd like to introduce my STARS team here. So
Chair Lilly and members, my name is Joe Lincheski, and I'm the committee legislative assistant for Legacy, and I work with I'll be working with Leon all year. So I actually, I guess I wasn't on the photo slash book club, because I actually brought a rock, and it's up in the North Shore, just kind of along the lake there. And so I actually was trying to find our agate collection, because I know we have a bunch of those, but I think somebody must have hit it somewhere in the house. So I think the whole Legacy Amendment is amazing, and you mentioned that even in the depths of the recession that you could ask for a tax raise to do this. I also always go fishing all over the state with my dad, and a lot of those streams are actually helped by this fund. So it's pretty great, and I'm excited to work for you, all of you.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Molzan?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm going to be your committee administrator. My name is Mike Molzan. Brought a picture of myself hiking the Superior Hiking Trail in Crosby, Manitou, kayaking the wonderful national park we have right here in the Mississippi in St. Paul, and then with a walleye that is at least 3 feet long from Cass County and Woman Lake. Thank you.
Makes you hungry. Good-looking walleye there. Well, thank you, everyone, for playing. I think we're maybe we could have the House just introduce themselves, the House researchers. But I think we're going to, because we kind of get a little carried away, we want to make sure we get the OLA. And I think these folks are willing to come back if they need be. But and they might have brought homework. I don't know. We'll see.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Helen Roberts from the House Fiscal Staff, nonpartisan fiscal staff. I have staffed this committee in the past during the first year under Chair Murphy, but have not been staffed for the last 4 years because of a scheduling conflict. And I also staffed the State Government Finance Committee, which has the general fund portion for a lot of the agencies that are funded in the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts. And
I'm Mr. Chair, I'm Brad Hegemeyer. I'm with the House Fiscal Analysis Department as well. I work on the other four funds, the Parks and Trails, Clean Water, and Outdoor Heritage Funds, and I also staff the Environment Finance Committee.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Janelle Taylor. I'm also nonpartisan House Research Staff. I cover the Outdoor Heritage Fund, Parks and Trails Fund, and the Clean Water Fund, and I also staff the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and the Policy Committees.
Thank you very much. Ms. Mullen?
Chair and members, Mary Mullen. I'm from the House Research Department as well, and I do the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
Thank you very much. Wow. So next time you come back, we need some homework, though, because Mr. Hegemeyer has kind of a neat thing in his office. I hope he can bring it. Oh, the numbers. So if we could have the old ache come up, we're just going to move it up ahead. And so one of the – it's always a neat thing for me as a legislator to have the OLA that can do the Office of Legislative Auditor that can do research on different projects. And they've done quite a few, and they'll tell you about most of them. But they came to my office, and I asked them to, and they had come to the freshman training, and some of you that were there, and I asked them if they would be willing to come visit in my office. And I said, I'd really like to hit the ground running, because with some of this, and to kind of back up and look at where we've been, and you know, make sure that we're doing good work, you know, as far as they were concerned. And sometimes they can ask questions that we necessarily can't and get to the bottom. But go ahead and start with your presentation. I don't know how exactly you want to work it, but Mr. Nobles, if you want to start off, perhaps, and then introduce yourself, please, for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor, and with me at the table is Judy Randall, who's the deputy legislative auditor for our program evaluation division. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for having us here at this first meeting of this committee, and I congratulate you all on your elections and on your being here on this committee. What I will say before I get into our presentation is have fun. It is fun to see all of the good things done with the legacy money, But now we're going to talk about some of the issues that are kind of the parameters that you, the legislature, have put around the money, the legacy money, the four funds. And our job is to go out after you're finished, after you've appropriated money, and look to see how well the agencies, the nonprofit organizations, have complied with the law, the statutory requirements, and the constitutional requirements. And that's really what we want to talk about, as well as what is being accomplished, what are the outcomes. So our role is really the same role that we have throughout all of our work. Every day, this is what we do. We strengthen legislative oversight. As the chair just said, sometimes we can dig a little deeper, reach a little further into the organizations that get public money. We do have a strong authority to see all data and documents, regardless of classification. People who do receive any public money have to cooperate with our investigations, our audits, our special reviews and evaluations. And we just have the staff who full-time every day, that's what we do. So you will spend a lot of time together, and many days we won't be here because we will be out doing audit work from the actions you took in previous years. And so that's what post-audit work is. So one of the things I want to talk about is, what do we test? One of the things traditionally that auditors do is they test for compliance. And then Ms. Randall is going to talk about some of the issues that have already been mentioned, and that is the outcomes. What are we getting? What are we building as a legacy with this money? So in terms of compliance, we really look again at what you have enacted. First, when we say we're going to go out and do some audit work, we look at the appropriations law. And I meant to bring one to open it up, but they're sitting there behind you. But that's the first thing we do. We say in 2015, 16, 17, whatever period of time we pick, we open up the appropriations laws. We can't look at all of the appropriations, all of the programs, all of the projects, but we'll pick a population of appropriations. And then we'll have a sample of those, and we will go out and we will first say, did the people who received this money spend it on the thing you said in the appropriation law? And one of the really important and I think really neat things about this committee is that you deliberate so long and in such detail on exactly what you want to accomplish, and you do say some fairly specific things often about how that money is going to be spent in the appropriation law. In other cases, sometimes you turn over a fairly large pot of money to one of the organizations, to the Pollution Control Agency or the Minnesota Historical Society, and you say, use this money for a broad program or purpose, but you decide on who is going to receive the grants or exactly which projects you're going to fund with this money. But we will look at whether it's a general requirement or a very detailed and specific requirement and ask the basic question, was this money spent for the purposes that you laid out in the appropriation law? There are also other laws that can apply, that apply to the expenditure of any public money, that will apply to legacy money as well. And so we'll check those. And because a lot of legacy money is spent by giving money to nonprofit organizations through grants, we look at whether or not the recipient organization has complied with the grant policies of the state and the grant requirements that are written into the grant by which the money is conveyed. And sometimes there's also contract requirements that we will look at. So we consider all of these legal requirements that have to be complied with, have to be followed. Now we get into some of the tricky ones. The two that have been the most difficult over the years, and many of you are very familiar with this. And Representative Murphy, others who've been here a long time, I think you made the declaration from day one. You don't want a whole bunch of this money being spent on, and I'll just say it, the bureaucracy. You want this money going out into the field, into your communities, into your districts, being spent on projects. But you have recognized that in doing that, agencies do need to spend some money on administrative costs. And so over the years, we've worked together to try to figure out how you can put some boundaries. The original idea was that you would put a percentage. We're going to give you $1 million and you can spend 2% of it or 10% of it on administrative costs. There were problems with that. And so with Representative Erdahl, with Representative Murphy and a lot of other people, with a lot of the people who are in this audience, we tried to figure out a different way. And that way right now is what is called the administrative expense restriction. And why don't we just go to that one? And that language has already been mentioned. And this is language that you consistently attach now when you make an appropriation. You say that money appropriated in this section or this subdivision must not be spent on administrative expenses that are not directly related to and necessary for this specific appropriation. So what you're saying is you can't just spend it in general on administrative expenses. Those have to be directly related to and necessary for that project or that program. Let me give you an example. Some agencies, and I must say, this is very controversial, and it's not the favorite statutory and session law language for the agencies or for the nonprofits. They think it is a little bit too narrow to have to document that this legacy money was spent only for administrative costs that were directly related to and necessary for that particular appropriation, because they say, gosh, we do a lot of legacy work, and we've got to have money from all kinds of sources, general fund, game and fish fund, to support our legal department. So why can't we take some of the legacy money, some percentage of it, to pay for the costs of our legal department? Other funds pay that. But you've put this language in that says, yes, you can do that if you can show that the cost you allocated for the legal department in the Department of Natural Resources was directly related to and necessary for this particular appropriation. Sometimes they can. Sometimes they can't. For example, you might have appropriated some money for an easement, and they've got to have lawyers involved in writing the easements. I think Representative Wagenius will tell you from her experience, sometimes they might do a better job of writing those easements, but lawyers were involved. And so if they spent 10 hours, 20 hours, 30 hours, they charge that to that particular appropriation. But if we go over and say, you know, you took $10,000, $20,000 to pay for the legal bills, and we don't see any documentation that involved the lawyers on this particular project, we would say, you're not complying with this provision. Now we come to one that's trickier still. And that's the one you put in the Constitution. And you said that legacy money must be spent to supplement traditional sources of funding for the purposes of the four funds, the purposes that you laid out, and may not be used to substitute for the traditional. That's been tricky, and I would point you to our 2011 report on this issue. We also have some discussion on the administrative cost issue. But if, when you have an opportunity, you turn to...
Members, you can find these reports in your folders, so if you...
Page 45. So you will find quite a bit of a discussion in this report on why it's so hard to figure out compliance with this provision. And I think the most difficult part is the word traditional. When does a source of funding become traditional? Is it because it was there last year? Because it's been there 2 years, 4 years, 6 years, you never defined that. So it becomes a judgment to some degree. Now, again, this is difficult for the agencies, because we will go in and say, you know, we always like to, there's probably people here from DNR, and we always sort of pick on them, but no, let's pick on the Arts Board. They're here too. We have an audit report coming out, an evaluation report. We may say, gosh, you spent quite a bit of money to pay some salaries for your top administrators out of legacy money. And they will say, yeah, because 20%, 30% of the work we do is legacy. And so it might meet that directly related to a necessary for test. These people actually worked on that program, those grants. But we would ask, well, how did you pay those expenses before the legacy money? And they would say, well, we paid those out of general fund money. Aren't you now substituting legacy money for general fund money? Well, that's a real conundrum and a difficult one, and that's one we're going to struggle with. So I'm going to now turn to Ms. Randall to talk about the easiest part of this.
Thank you.
That is figuring out the outcomes, measuring what's the results.
Thank you, Mr. Nobles. Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Judy Randall. I'm the Deputy Legislative Auditor for the Program Evaluation Division. And yes, Mr. Nobles was being sarcastic when he said this was the easiest part of all. You know, I think the voters and you all put legacy funds into place because we wanted outcomes, right? We're spending a lot of money to achieve some desired outcome, but exactly what those are and then determining whether we've achieved them is actually a lot harder than I think we all wished it was. So first of all, let's just talk about some desired outcomes. Surely they're going to vary by fund, but really you can drill down and identify different layers of outcomes. I'm going to continue to pick on the Arts Board because they're here and it's easy to pick on them. What is the desired outcomes from the money we're spending with the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund related to the Arts Board? Is it to have more art? Is it to have more artists? Is it to have more people go enjoy the arts in whatever form that may be? Maybe. Or maybe it's to change people's attitudes towards art or towards different cultures. I mean, the outcomes that we desire from these funds can be either very narrow or very broad. I think there's a good argument for saying we want them to be as expansive as possible. But as they become more expansive, they get harder and harder to measure. Sure, we could measure the number of art gallery showings and dances and sculptures, and we can measure those relatively easily. But how do we measure changing people's attitudes through art, changing people's attitudes to different cultures through art? That gets a lot harder to measure. One that seems that it should be easier to measure is one I know Representative Wagenius is really interested in, and we all are, is the cleanliness of our water. I mean, I think we would all agree that the Clean Water Fund should help to achieve cleaner water. But figuring that out is actually really difficult. In your packet, we have an evaluation that we issued 2 years ago on called Clean Water Fund Outcomes. So you would think that in that evaluation we would be able to say what the outcomes were from the Clean Water Fund. And what we actually say is it's really hard to measure that. First of all, we need to have some baseline information. You know, where are we starting? What is the pollutant level of our different bodies of water in our rivers? So we have to establish some of that baseline data. And then we have to go back and measure, say, okay, we measured the baseline of the Minnesota River. Let's just make it easy, right, 10 years ago. All right, now we're going to go back and measure it again. We've put in buffer strips. We've done permitting. We've done a whole bunch of activity. And now we're going to go back and measure it again. What if those measurements showed that the level of pollution in that part of the river was the same as it had been 10 years ago? Is that success? It might be, right? I don't know. I mean, it might be that because of all of those activities, we stopped that portion of the river from getting more polluted. It may not be a success. Maybe we could have done better. So measuring outcomes is difficult now, and it's going to continue to be difficult. And unfortunately, I think what Mr. Nobles and I are here to say is these issues, the administrative expenses, the supplant question, and outcomes are going to be continuing challenges for this committee throughout your time here. We do have some recommendations that aren't really, they're not the silver bullet, but they're things for you to think about as you do your work. One is keep paying attention to these issues. They've been here for 10 years. They're unfortunately not going away. And I think it's really good to have them at the top of your mind. The other thing that we would encourage you to do is, as different organizations and agencies come to you requesting funding, whether it's funding for a new activity or a funding to continue the legacy-funded work that they've already been doing, ask them to provide you this information. Ask them to demonstrate how they are using the money and whether they're using it for administrative expenses or not. Ask them how they funded this money before, or how they funded these activities before, and is the legacy money being used to supplement activities, or is it being used as a substitution? And then finally, ask them to show you the outcomes that they've achieved. Certainly for new organizations requesting new money, they won't be able to do that. But a lot of these organizations and agencies 10 years in have received legacy money before, the ones who are coming to ask for you for money again. Ask them to show you what they've achieved. And maybe it's a simplistic outcome, or maybe it's one of those more detailed, expansive outcomes. And people are going to be at different levels of being able to provide you information, and their activities are going to be at different levels, and that's okay. But I think 10 years in, it's fair to start asking those recipient organizations to demonstrate what they've accomplished with the money. I will also just note that, as Mr. Nobles mentioned, we are just wrapping up right now an evaluation on the Arts Board, especially focused on their grants administration, and we plan to have that ready for release in a couple weeks. And so when that's ready, we'll certainly be happy to talk with you more about that. And in there, not only do we talk about the grants administration and some of those compliance things, but we do touch on outcomes and the Arts Board's efforts to measure those as well. So we too can be a part of this ongoing conversation with you as you continue to provide this oversight of this important set of funds. So with that, Mr. Chair, Mr. Nobles is saying no. So if there's any questions, we'd be happy to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you both very much for coming in. We do have a couple questions, but I just really want to thank you for coming, and I just really thought it was important that we start here, and especially with the 10th year, but you've done a lot of reports. These reports are they're at the table, or should be, but you certainly have them on your website. We did make a mistake. Mr. Keller was in the crowd today, and he asked that we did not incorporate it with our meeting notes or something, right? They're not on our website, so my apologies, but we'll try to do a better job in the future. But Representative Green, you have some questions?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you guys for coming today. I first of all, want to commend you for the work that you do. I've worked with you in the past and always been so pleased with the information I get from you. And how nonpartisan you are is amazing to me. When you work in a place like this and you can remain nonpartisan, I think it's great. I would say that to the people of the committee, first of all, if you are interested at all in this committee, get these books and keep them. I have two sets, always at least. I have one here and one at home because I use them in both places. And as far as the outcomes go, I think that when you go, the measured outcomes, you're right. It's hard to do the measured outcomes. But we do see where the money's gone. And I think that if we can get that out into the public, which I try to do, the public will decide of the outcome. And if they're looking at X number of dollars being spent here, you guys will learn this if you don't know it already, one of the biggest issues with me is the land acquisitions that we have in the state. And how our state now is, if not already there, very close to one-third publicly owned. And it's really killing us in property taxes, especially in greater Minnesota. And I don't see any value at all in the state land as far as clean water, because that hasn't changed, even if they've and I've tried to get some funding for testing on state lands and to see if it does make a difference on the nitrogen. But that, you know, getting off subject, but I think just knowing when the agencies turn in what they've done with the money, and then you going in and telling us, yes, they complied, no, they didn't comply, and it gives us an opportunity then to look for bills for the future as to how to correct the things that you give. It's just been invaluable, so thank you again.
And Mr. Chair, if I might just thank Representative Green. He has really been one of our best customers, shall we say, for our reports. He reads them. He knows what's in them. He follows up on them. He takes this issue of accountability and oversight very, very seriously. So I really appreciate his work.
Thank you, Mr. Nobles. And and that is true. Representative Green has been persistent and thorough on that, and it's good. Representative Jean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Randall and Mr. Nobles, I've been approached by some new nonprofit groups trying to seek funding, and I'm just wondering, you mentioned a lot about compliance, but what are the consequences if they are not in compliance, especially for new institutions who come in and can't follow through?
Mr. Chair, it really depends on what the noncompliance is. Sometimes noncompliance occurs because there are misunderstandings, because people have not written the grant agreement very clearly. Maybe the organization that provided the money needed to provide more education. So if we find that that's the case, our recommendation would be that you solve that problem. You try to be more clear. It hasn't occurred very often, but I will just go from that point where it's just misunderstanding an innocent mistake, let's say. If we were to find with any public money spent by anybody that it was used illegally for an illegal purpose, an organization gets money from the state and spends it on personal expenses, we would investigate that and turn that over to law enforcement. And it would be up to law enforcement, in most cases, the county attorney, to determine whether or not to prosecute, and the attorney general to seek civil recovery. Sometimes agencies seek that civil recovery or recovery of the money before it goes to civil action. So depends on the severity of the issue.
Representative Jean, can you follow up? Or?
No, Mr. Chair, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Green, I don't think you were wrong to talk about measuring nitrogen coming off the land. I think it's generally understood that you can't manage what you don't measure. I mean, that's what business tells us all the time. And certainly that's equally true of government. And so one of the issues is that when you all did the Clean Water Fund outcomes, you didn't talk about drinking water and or look at it. And had you looked at it, you would have found that we are not measuring drinking water contaminants in surface water. So if you don't measure it, how can you manage it? And there are actually 25 systems in Minnesota that use surface water for drinking water. It's probably about 25% of our population. Nobody knows exactly the number. So I think that's something we need to talk about, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. Mr. Nobles?
If I could just respond to that, Representative Wagenius is absolutely correct. And, you know, I would only point out that we always have to take a topic and scope it into what we can manage to do. And sometimes we scope out certain issues that we think are important, you think are important, and that's why our work is never done. We can always go back. And, in fact, I would really like to, and I know you've got other things you want to talk about, Mr. Chair, with other people, but I just want to maintain a close relationship with this committee and hear from you on what issues you're seeing, what issues you want us to address. It sometimes will take us some time to come back to you with a report. So it won't be like you'll ask us today and we'll come back tomorrow, because you want us to be thorough and you want us to be accurate. But certainly as issues come up, either for audits, investigations, or evaluations, please be in touch with us and let us know what you want us to work on.
Thank you, Mr. Nobles. I hope everybody's heard that, and certainly that's why we invited you here today. And I know you and your team have just been great for this particular committee, and but the whole legislature, you know, as well. Representative Hausman, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and mine is more to the committee and to you. Yep. As I look at all this and sort through. I'm overwhelmed. And I wonder if the voters ever imagined we were going to make it this complicated when they voted. Because, I mean, knowing voters the way we do, I mean, they do look for information, but, I mean, they make their decisions fairly simply. And I'm guessing most voters went to the polls and said, absolutely, I want clean water. Absolutely, I want parks and trails. Absolutely, I treasure arts and culture. And I want to put more money into them, period. But we've put a lot of rules and oversight that I wonder if the voters had ever intended it to be this complicated.
Representative Hausman, I don't know if that's a question. I highly doubt that the voters gave it. You know, I mean, I'm sure it varied with each voter. I do think it's our duty, just my sense from serving on the committee, I think we are of some higher level of responsibility to really look at all of it and make it a little more complicated, if you will, to just make sure it is doing good work. I just and so at the end of the 25 years, we can say, you know, that we did good work in clean water. We've done good work in the outdoor heritage area and parks and trails, and the same with, you know, with the arts. So I think we're the voters, you know, each voter, I'm sure, votes for different reasons, but I think ultimately I think we're held to a higher standard, and I think I guess I, as chair, would expect that we would, you know, expect that of the people that are requesting money, so.
And, Mr. Chair, I think
Representative Hausman,
I'm reflecting in terms of what's in front of us today.
Yep.
That, I mean, I think it's a little bit in response to this.
Yep. Thank you, Representative. And thank you, Mr. Nobles, and thank you for coming, bringing your team. Yeah, like I said earlier, you have an amazing team, and Ms. Randall, thank you for coming as well. So we're going to jump over here to some of our House nonpartisan team, and we're going to start with Ms. Taylor, I believe, and just kind of work through. We're under a little bit of rush here, but we can certainly have you back. Or they're on the third floor as well, or varied in the state office building, and can very accessible also to answer questions and in the each fund or whatever it is. So, Ms. Taylor.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You should have a document called Legacy Amendment that has the House Research logo on it. I'm not going to go through all the detail here, but I encourage you to read it if you want a little background. It sounds like from, you know, the roundtable that a lot of you are very familiar with the funds already, so I'm just going to go over the big highlights. As you know, the voters passed a constitutional amendment that increased our state sales tax by 0.375% for 25 years. Those revenues go into the four funds that we've been talking about. The first one I'll talk about is the Outdoor Heritage Fund. This receives 33% of those revenues, and the Constitution requires that those funds be spent to restore, protect, and enhance wetlands, prairies, forests, and habitat for fish, game, and wildlife. When the amendment was passed, some enabling legislation also went along with that, and it established the Lessard Sands Outdoor Heritage Council, and they provide recommendations to the legislature on how to use those funds. Chair Lilly has served this past year, and they put together an annual funding bill that then usually one of the legislative members will introduce, and in the coming weeks, I'm sure the staff and the members will come and explain to you their process and what they have recommended this year. So look forward to that. The next fund I'll talk to you about is the Clean Water Fund. It also receives 33% of the revenues, and by the Constitution, it's the money can only be spent to protect, enhance, and restore water quality in lakes, rivers, and streams, and to protect groundwater from degradation. There's also a provision that requires 5% of, or at least 5% of the funds to be spent on to protect drinking water sources. There's also a council that makes recommendations on how to spend this money, and that's the Clean Water Council. They're a little bit different, and they don't kind of vet individual projects, but they'll put together a package that recommends funding for programs at state agencies like grant programs or sort of
monitoring and assessment activities at some of the state agencies and other things like that. They put together a report, and this is a two-year report that has their recommendations, and this the governor and the legislature typically use those recommendations to put together their funding recommendations. And again, I assume the Clean Water Council will be for the committee in the coming weeks to go over what they recommend this year. The next fund I'll talk about is the Parks and Trails Fund. They receive 14.25% of the funds. This is by constitution required to be spent to support parks and trails of regional and statewide significance. There isn't an overarching council that makes recommendations on this, but as Chair Erdahl alluded to, it was kind of contentious. So a while back, the legislature required the DNR to convene a working group to put together some consensus recommendations on how to spend that money. And the 40-40-20 split was alluded to. And what that means is that 40% of the funds would be recommended to go to the DNR for their state parks, their state trails and rec areas. And then another 40% would go to the Met Council that would be distributed by a, there's a formula in statute that says how that would be distributed, but that goes out to 11 different implementing agencies that sort of run the metro regional parks. And then the remaining 20% would go to regional parks and trails in Greater Minnesota. And they did establish recently the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails Commission, and they make recommendations on how to spend those funds, and the legislature has largely followed those. So that's about all I'm going to say, and I'll turn it over to Ms. Mullen.
Ms. Mullen.
Thank you, Chair and members. I'm going to talk about the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. There's a handout. I'll just hit the highlights of it. Like Janelle said, each fund has a certain percentage from the sales tax, and the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund gets 19.75% of the total amount collected. The Constitution requires that the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund be spent only for arts, arts education, and arts access, and to preserve Minnesota's history and cultural heritage. There's no permanent council or other group that makes recommendations. The legislature bases their funding decisions largely on input from stakeholders. The arts and cultural heritage appropriations have predominantly been spent on programming and education. Some examples of this are nonprofit radio and television, individual artists, arts organizations, educational opportunities in arts, history, and culture, zoological programs, American Indian language and historic preservation, museum upgrades, and historic preservation of historic sites and artifacts. The funds go to a fiscal agent, a state agency, council, or commission who either uses the funds for their own operations to do new programming or education, or to provide grants to outside nonprofits working in arts, culture, and history. The State Arts Board, according to statute, gets 47% of the annual appropriation. That makes them the largest recipient of state Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund money, and 30% of that funding goes to the regional arts councils, which are located throughout the entire state. There are 11 regional arts councils. The Historical Society has also been a regular recipient, and they use the money for their own History Center programs and other operations, as well as giving grants to local historical societies. Projects funded by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund have to be located in Minnesota. They have to supplement traditional sources of funding, not supplant them. Which is what the auditor was talking about. And they have to have grant agreements consistent with the state grant agreement management laws, as well as the reporting that's required to the Legislative Coordinating Commission, which you heard a little bit about. In the year they're funded, by January 15th, they have to provide that information to the LCC. And that website is it's the legacy website. It covers all four funds, and it's a great place to look at projects that have been funded. The final funding requirement is that 5% of the projected receipts have to be reserved and not appropriated in order to make sure that there isn't an issue if the forecast is inaccurate. And this applies to all four funds. So there's a 5% reserve from the forecast. There are two, there's one sort of bar graph in here that looks at funding from the last biennium. And then the last two pages of this publication give you a list of all the people who've been funded in the past from Arts and Cultural Heritage money. So if you're interested, that's there. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hagar.
Mr. Chair, I'm Brad Hagemeyer again from the House Fiscal Analysis Department. And just following along with our counterparts in House Research here, there's four different graphs you have on the sheets that look like this. Since it's a 10 we've had 10 years of funding now. We decided to pull together the last 10 years and about how much has been funded at a very high level here for you, but we can certainly work with any members on individual issues or smaller detail if you'd like. The constitutional amendment was passed in 2008. The first appropriations were made in the laws of 2009 for fiscal year 2010. So that's the very first appropriations made out of the four legacy funds. And I'm just starting with the Outdoor Heritage Fund first, if you'd like to look at that one. You'll see the first bar on each set of graphs for fiscal year 10 or 11 or 12, whatever year it is, are the tax receipts, and those are just pulled from the consolidated fund statement. You can see we started out around $70 million. The tax receipts are nearly $120 million now, I believe, for going forward.
I don't believe we have a bar graph, so we'll make sure. Do some members have them? I don't. We'll make sure you get one. Go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Okay, that's fine. Then I'll go very quickly on it. as you can see, it's been kind of steadily growing on tax receipts. Just be somewhat cautious. We do base the 5% reserve on the various forecasts. And we have had negative forecasts where we've had to balance our budgets out a little bit. On some of these, you'll see there's a differentiation between the tax receipts and then the appropriations, which would be that 5% reserve or whatever percent reserve we decide to make that year. And then the last bar on these will be the expenditures, and there's a larger gap there. Outdoor Heritage, you'll see that gap for a while because they have longer amount of time to spend the money. So you'll see quite a gap for 4 or 5 years until they've actually spent some of those first year's appropriations. And they're annually, Clean Water Fund's a little bit tighter since it's the agency spending the money. Same with the Parks and Trails, they have a shorter amount of time to spend them and using that with sense. But since you guys don't have those, I will skip to this one. I think I saw some people have this one.
This we're just handing them out now, the bar graphs, so go ahead. And
that's fine. Look at these are the current legacy fund projected balances that we have. These are based on the November forecast, just for everyone's knowledge. We do make the bill based on the February forecast, which we'll receive in the end of February, beginning of March, something like that, in order to get the correct percent reserves in there. You'll see, even though like Outdoor Heritage and Clean Water receive the same amount of funds as tax receipts, they have different amounts of investment income that's based on the balance they have and the balance forward based on what we've spent in prior years or things that have canceled. So in general, you can see that for the biennium, we'll have approximately $250 million for the Outdoor Heritage Fund, $141 million from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, $264 from the Clean Water Fund, and $102 million from the Parks and Trails Fund that would be available to spend. But again, that can go up or down based on the February forecast. And we kind of keep that 5% reserve, unlike the state budget, which has a number of revenue sources, were tied to just the sales tax. So a bump, even though we might have a increase in a forecast, the sales tax could still be down, which can affect the legacy funds.
Thank you, Mr. Hagemeyer. Ms. Roberts? Or is it all done?
I think he covered it.
Oh, okay. We're down to a few seconds, but is there any questions for these folks? And they certainly are available. Are you all on the third floor, or you're kind of all over the place?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Roberts and myself are on the third floor. Ms. Taylor, Ms. Mullen are on the sixth floor. But we're in committee every week as well, and you can call or email us if you have questions.
So I think we had a good meeting. My apologies again. We're going to post the stuff that wasn't posted and make sure that that's available for the public. And again, thank you for bringing homework. I always think it's nice to get to know people on a different level and get to know more about each other. But I'm excited to see many of our people have wanted to be on this committee, and I think we do good work in all the funds, and definitely enhances Minnesota. But thank you very much. With that, we're adjourned.